So we're here for our last session of this program, and then we'll take a break over the summer, except that we will come back 2 weeks from today, and the idea is to have a practice day that we will share on the day before. So that'll be Saturday, I don't remember the exact day, but it's anyway, it's 2 weeks. I think it's 2 weeks from today, right? I'll confirm it. I'll put it up on the when I send around the orientation or the guide for the practice. So I actually would like to focus on practice today too, but I want to take a fair amount of time to set it up, and then I'd like us to take a little bit more time in practice than we usually do. Typically, we do these very short 2 minute sessions. I'm thinking we can be very generous with ourselves and give us maybe 5 minutes or so. But I need to set it up. And let me say that what's behind this is where we ended last time. I pointed out on the bottom of page 64 that Rinpoche offers these three possibilities of inquiry, speculation, and imagination. He suggests those. He's really kind of introducing a methodology, and it's a very interesting methodology. And as I mentioned, you can find out more about this in Visions of Knowledge. He has more to say about the power of inquiry and speculation and imagination. So those are really the two places in the two TSK books here, where it's very short, and a little more in Visions of Knowledge, where he talks about those three. But I think it's really interesting, and I haven't worked with it in too much detail in the past, so this is kind of an experiment to see whether we can really work with that. And I want to introduce it today and work with it, and then I'm going to suggest that over the next couple of weeks, you look for ways to explore it, and that will be at least part of what we talk about when we meet in a couple of weeks after the practice session. So, let me set the stage quickly and then go into the very specific instructions, it seems to me, that Rinpoche gives, and then we'll do it. So Rinpoche is talking in the middle of page 64 about multidimensional appearance and the energy that that brings. So we're looking at zeroless space and non-dimensionality, and the basic idea here, there's a lot of different vocabulary you could use for it, but the basic idea, it seems to me, is that nothing has ever been established. Everything is a kind of a construction, and the zeroless remains available. So the question is, how can we connect with that availability and the energy? As he says on page 64, he calls it an unthinkable energy. So there's this tremendous energy available, and a kind of a freedom which also talks or makes available all sorts of possibilities. We're getting a little feedback from somebody. I don't know who that is. It's not feedback. I shouldn't say that. It's just some background noise. Kind of almost music. Okay, well, maybe stop now. Okay. So this non-dimensionality, the energy that it makes available, and he says we've channeled that energy into a particular approach. We've created these rigid structures, and this is a theme that we've been exploring for quite a while now. And then he says it doesn't have to be that way. We can invite that energy, invite the zeroless and limitless wonderment. We can bring that back in, and we can do that through inquiry, speculation, and imagination. So that's what I want to explore. And that's where we start on page 65. Rinpoche brings back in these themes in a little bit different way, but not exactly the same order, but there's inquiry, speculation, and imagination. And he says at the very top of page 65, inquiry moves from speculation and analysis through imagination and embodiment. So let's just talk about that abstractly. He's laying out any possible situation in which you start to inquire. You really put a focus on inquiry. And the kind of inquiry that we're talking about here is, I think for now, you can say any kind of inquiry. Whenever you ask a question, the moment you ask a question, something is called into question, and what has been called into question is newly available. And that really is the starting point, you could say. So there is some kind of situation, whatever it is, the situation that we're going to call into question. We're going to start our inquiry. And what he says in this first sentence is inquiry, in effect, he says inquiry starts off with speculation and analysis, and then it moves into or through imagination and embodiment. And we'll kind of work that out as we go along here. But there's, well, let's start it this way. You're doing the inquiry, and the first thing is you do, you speculate, right? Now, I think, or at least the way that it makes sense to me to think about that, is that the speculation is just kind of an ordinary speculation. You find yourself in a situation, you have some question about it, and the question might well be, how did this arise? Let's say the situation is one where you're feeling stuck, or you're feeling negative, or you're something about it has caused you to want to ask a question about it. And so the first thing you do is you speculate about what's going on or about how the situation arose. And ordinarily, that speculation is in the form of looking for an explanation, right? So you're going to just speculate and analyze. And in the beginning, that has to do with explanation. So let's say, take a very trivial example. Let's say something in your computer isn't working right. So you look for an explanation. You speculate, you analyze, you try to explain what's going on. And that's a starting point. That doesn't really get us very far. It's a kind of a preliminary thing, because when you do that kind of analysis, and when you speculate toward an explanation, you're staying within the realm of substance and positions and conditions, substance and identity, as Rinpoche says. This is all, I'm using some of the language that he uses at the bottom of page 64. So that's the original concern, or the original move that you make. You start to ask a question, you inquire, but you are within the ordinary structures. So the question is, how do you go on to the next phase? We're still on the first sentence here. How do you move from speculation and analysis through imagination and embodiment, which I understand to be deeper. A deeper kind of inquiry. Imagination opens up possibilities. Embodiment lets those possibilities, in some sense, become real. So the first kind of inquiry is just discovering the ordinary. You're trying to get more clear to analyze the ordinary. So it's a kind of a lower level speculation. It's just trying to get clear on the way things are. But it is still inquiry, and it is still speculation, and I think that's the important point that this first sentence leads us to, because it talks about the emerging dynamic that retraces the steps that found the ordinary. So we find ourselves in a situation, and normally we don't question it. You know, I mean, there's we may think of ourselves as questioning a lot, but in fact, you know, 99% of the time, and with 99% of our world and our experience, we don't ask questions. Mostly, perhaps it's because we don't care. We just take it for granted. We just think this is the way things are. So mostly, we're not questioning. So now we're asking a question, and what we're doing is activating a dynamic. The inquiry itself activates a dynamic, and that is absolutely critical. Because in the dynamic of inquiry, and this is the beginning of the second paragraph now, you restore the energy within appearance. And that's the heart, I think, of what we want to be looking at today, and the heart of what I think Rinpoche is presenting as an approach, a way to really recover the wonderment of appearance. It starts with inquiry, and it does that because inquiry restores the energy within appearance. And how does it do that? It does it by retracing the steps through which appearance has taken form. So these may be steps in a kind of linear sequence. That's how we usually think of it. But it doesn't really have to be that way. You just, in the middle of the ordinary, you ask yourself about the arising of the ordinary. You trace it back in different ways. And it's, again, it's the act of tracing that awakens this energy that is locked up inside our ordinary experience. That's kind of the fundamental point. Doing that, by doing the inquiry, you are restoring or recovering or revealing the energy. And, well, let's see, how does he say it? He says, the creativity of space and the power of time. So look at that second paragraph again. Inquiry restores the untrammeled energy within appearance, challenging us to question the structures of reality. It shows that we cannot rely on this and that and so on. By questioning what appears, the energy that has been frozen in that appearance becomes available. Okay, I think I'm kind of repeating myself a little too much here. So let's look at that. But I do want to make a point about it. You know, people very often say that the genius of the scientific method is that it's always asking questions, right? It doesn't just accept things as they are, and it asks questions. And I think that's, you know, science works within its own arena. It has its limits. But you could say that's exactly the same thing as what's being pointed at here. When you ask questions, it's as though you free up the energy in appearance and you allow for the possibility that new knowledge can emerge. Right? So the difference between what we're talking about and the kind of inquiry that you do in science has to do with the view, right? The you know, science accepts that there's an order and a structure, and its aim is to go more deeply into that order and structure. The TSK vision accepts that there's an order and a structure, but it also says that order and structure is a manifestation of a deeper knowing, a more open space, and a more dynamic and liberating time. And we want to be able to find that, so or connect with that, or discover that, or renew that. So it's a very fundamental difference, and yet the two are also related to each other. So that's one reason, you know, I'm saying here that Rinpoche, in this page that we're looking at and that I'm analyzing in perhaps too much detail, but in some detail, In this page, Rinpoche is presenting a kind of a methodology, but in order for the methodology to work, we have to have already made our way through the kind of inquiry that we've been doing, which is partly, exploring the vision that TSK presents, and partly really activating that vision or looking for ways to activate it through the kinds of exercises we've been doing. What is it, the playfulness of thoughts and abiding in thought, those kinds of things where, different ways of unlocking a kind of underlying energy. Okay. So that's what inquiry does. And in this context, once the vision is in place, you can say that's what inquiry does. Now, how does it move through speculation and analysis, or from speculation and analysis through imagination and embodiment? Well, the key here is imagination. You allow for other possibilities. And one of the reasons you can do that, again, is because of the view, because you recognize that the things we take for granted are only based on conditions and positions that we have accepted in the past. And so you allow yourself to imagine that it could all be different. And then on the basis of that imagination, it becomes possible to embody that difference so that it's not as though you have to change the way things are, but you embody the possibility of difference within the way things are, or maybe not within, maybe in some completely different way. Anything is possible, but imagining the possibility, imagining the opportunity for difference, that's where inquiry begins to move into new territories. And that's the third paragraph where Rinpoche says, freed through inquiry from substance and the need to found an order, thoughts awaken to the lightness of their arising. And that's a wonderful point about TSK. It's something that is very special, it seems to me. And that is to say, or what I'm trying to point to is that you can use thoughts as the vehicle for imagination and embodiment. Right? Ordinarily, thoughts are committed, as he says here, to substance and to founding an order. We use thoughts as a very particular tool. The purpose of thinking is to set things up, to give us a structure, to give us an order, to give us substance, to give us a world that we say, oh, this is the way things are, this is reality. When you ask questions and the questioning retraces the act of founding that reality, and in doing that awakens the energy which is locked up in founding the reality, now it can all be different. Now it's like undoing the whole thing. Not by denying it, not by challenging it really, just by awakening the energy through your questioning, by retracing the founding, the energy becomes available. It's unlocked, you could say. And so thoughts awaken to the lightness of their arising. And that's the kind of imagination and embodiment dimension. And as he says, you can think anything. Thoughts are completely free. We don't use them that way. We assign them a particular purpose, but really they're particularly free. And so when you go engage in this process, you can think playfully and with delight, right? So that freedom merges with the creative dynamic of inquiry. That's where we're in the third paragraph now, and I'm taking some time to set this up. But if you have any questions about what we're doing, what I'm trying to set up, please feel free to ask them, because I want to make sure that it's very simple what we're saying here, but it's also really unexpected, and so it takes a little bit of of inquiry and imagination to be able to tune into it. So let me go on with that and just make a kind of a side observation. It just struck me in this third paragraph, Rinpoche says, merging this freedom of thinking with the creative dynamic of inquiry, we can explore in a way that is pointless. Without points, with no zero and no one, what limits can there be? And I was just struck by the zero and the one. I don't imagine this is what Rinpoche had in mind when he wrote this, but whenever you talk about zero and one, if you're in a certain mindset, you start thinking about the binary system through which information is transmitted. You know, the whole world of computers is all a question of zeros and ones because it's in a base two system. And if you don't understand that, don't worry about it. It's not a main point that I'm making here. But the part that I found interesting was that there's a lot of talk these days about how, in certain circles, about how reality consists of information. You know, the world is really created out of information, and information is always understood digitally in terms of zeros and ones, yes and no, essentially. Well, maybe Rinpoche was talking about that because he has just talked about yes and no. But that's the whole idea: on and off, yes and no. That's the digital structure, and the information that's communicated in that way is the basis, people sometimes like to say now, of our whole reality, our whole physical reality. And that's a concept I don't think I understand fully yet, but it's interesting. And it's interesting just to think for a moment about the difference between that way of thinking and, let's say, a TSK way of thinking, or the knowledge that's being evoked in the TSK vision. Information is what gives you the structures of the way things are. Information is what tells you what's going on. It's what establishes the underlying order. And Rinpoche is saying here, that's exactly what we want to leave behind. Our way of exploration is pointless. It has nothing to do with zero and one. So the knowledge that becomes available to us has nothing to do with information in that sense. And that's interesting to me because I've been thinking lately in a different context about what's the difference between knowledge and information. Well, this is the difference between knowledge and information. So maybe that's, you know, because of what I've been thinking of that strikes me as interesting, but it's implied in what's going on here. There are no limits, right? So through inquiry, you free up this energy and you are enabled to imagine differently. So at that point, you know, the imagination that arises there, you might think of that as a higher level speculation. And I'm thinking about going back to page 60, the bottom of page 64, where Rinpoche says, you know, inquiry interacts with the ongoing energy of what manifests. We've been looking at that. Speculation reaches toward imagination, and that's what we've been talking about just now, and that's what I was just describing possibly as a kind of a higher speculation. Thoughts themselves, in the likeness of their arising, become speculative. They don't establish anything, they only speculate. And if you look at the original uses of the word speculation, they always have to do with speculating on higher matters, on God and the heaven realms and the stars and so on. Nowadays, it's a pretty ordinary word, but the original meaning was a speculation that opened everything up or that went to this deeper level. I think it's a little bit more like that. So that's the process of thinking playfully and with delight. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to turn away from ordinary experience, right? Because, you know, you're not, if you look at the very bottom of page 64, you're not affirming content, you're not establishing structure, but you're also not denying content. And you're not tearing down structure. this is just a different kind of knowledge. It has, if we were talking about information, that might make sense. But we're talking about knowledge, and the knowledge that we're talking about is a knowledge that opens up possibilities and has these qualities of being playful, delightful, right? Confident, free. I'm just looking at some of the language he's using. It's differently dimensioned. That's what he says in the last line on page 65. It's differently dimensioned. It's not as though you thought things were one way and they're another. It's that the very structure of the way things are, the very substance that thoughts ordinarily create, now through inquiry, all that has been called into question. So when that happens, you find yourself, and I'm turning now to page 66, when that, or as that happens, you can relax into it. That's the first full paragraph on page 66. We discover this knowledge by relaxing into it. So inquiry becomes a process of a kind of a deep relaxation, because thoughts no longer have to do this hard work of creating substance and establishing an order. The energy that formerly went into that now becomes available, and you can just relax into it. And you can give up, as he says here, the perpetual concern that we're somehow at fault or at risk. You don't need to be right. You don't need to be, you're not the one who caused the problem. That's being at fault. You're not the one who's threatened, because there really isn't anything to threaten you. And you're not the one who has to make sure that everything is a certain way, because there no longer is a certain way that things have to be. And that's what Rinpoche describes here as being at home in a zeroless space abiding. Okay, that's basically what I wanted to say. There's a little, later on in the chapter, he talks about being free from bondage to a certain kind of causality, because causality itself has to do with this structure. But that's the basic point that I wanted to make. Now, what I'd like to do for a few minutes now is actually work on this, and Rinpoche gives us a little clue at the in the last paragraph on page 66, when he says, he's talking about this play of appearance in non-dimensionalized space. That's what we've been talking about. And he says that it's available in each apparent structure. And that follows from everything we've been saying, because the structures are put into place by thought, and now you've freed thought from the need to do that. So you arrive again at the play of appearance. And then he gives some examples. The patterns of the personality, the tangles of emotionality, social interactions, and then he kinds of, as we say in America, he throws us a curveball. We thought we were kind of safely in the realm of the psychological, right? The patterns of personality, the tangles of emotionality, social interactions, and then he says, and chemical reactions. And even in the way that one physical object nestles within a bit of empty space. So that's a second level. So he talks about every domain, from the physical to the psychological, to the structures shaping each field of knowledge. It's the whole possible, it's the range of all possible knowledge. It's within all kinds of structures, this same play of appearance is available. What I want to suggest that we do now for a few minutes is apply this specifically in the realm of what he calls the tangles of emotionality. And the reason that I want to use that particular arena wouldn't have to be that, but it's something where if there's a shift, if there's a if we can kind of let inquiry lead us into this domain of that opens up through imagination and speculation, so that the world gets embodied differently. If that shift happens, we'll notice. We'd probably notice in other areas too, but this is a place where it's good to look, I think, just in terms of everyday life. I guess another reason that I think this is a good place to look is because, there's always a sense you say, well, TSK can be a little bit abstract, I'd like to make it more immediate in terms of things that are going on in our lives. So I thought the tangle of emotionalities would be good. So that's what I'd like us to do for about 5 minutes, and then we have, a few minutes to talk about it, and then we can continue. You can continue to explore on your own. So for about 5 minutes, I know I've gone through a lot here, but I did, I deliberately was repeating myself quite a bit because I hope it gets settled in. The basic idea is that through inquiry, things open up, and it's possible to speculate and imagine differently, and in that way free up an energy so that appearance can take on a different dimension of non-dimensionalized space. And what that may mean is that your sense of the way things are, that is very much going to be related to this emotional tangle, and you've got to pick out your own emotional tangle now. Something that happened recently or is ongoing, whatever, it may show up in a different light. So, nobody has been asking any questions, so I can only assume that's all clear. And let's try it for a few minutes, okay? And then we'll come back together and see where that's led us. So, we'll do this for about 5 minutes, maybe 4 minutes. Okay. Okay. So, I'll give people a chance to react to that or describe something about what you may have noticed. But while you're doing that, I'll just say something about, how it was for me in these last few minutes. I found myself actually going back and forth or rotating among several different interactions in which my sense has been that the people I was interacting with, and I don't mean to exclude myself, but I did in this interaction, that the several times where people I was interacting with seemed to me to have a very kind of firm position, a kind of a, and really I'm thinking of a kind of a needy position. They were, because they were feeling emotional, they were being kind of needy. And asking, asking how that happened. I mean, I wasn't trying to explain their emotionality. That was, I have an explanation in my mind, but that wasn't the point. But just asking how that emotional neediness or concern showed up, did seem to me to open it up. It was as though I was being very much conditioned by their emotionality. So the tangles of emotionality were other people's. That's always easier to look at than your own. But those tangles, as I asked about them, just in an open kind of way, not trying to explain them, it just seemed as though they lost some of their power. And I don't know. I think I'll stop there. That's what I have to say about my experience. Now we still have a few minutes left. I'd love to hear from somebody. This has been totally a monologue today, which is not my favorite way to be. I mean, I like to talk and all that. So has anybody been busily typing away in the chat room and now has something to share with us? Ah, Michael, thank you. Oh, this is before the practice. Okay. Asking a question, can a computer or machine feel? An old question. Okay, they can speculate or interpret, but the binary basis of all the information on which their presentations, deductions, etc. are based condemns them to an experience that cannot see the appearance before it is rendered in zeros and ones. We are apparently 99% operating on the same level as computers. Yeah, I think that's a good way of stating the point. There was an anthropologist, Claude Lévi-Strauss, very famously wrote, and this was a long time ago, back before people used computers much, but at least people knew about computers. He said he thought of some of the cultures that he studied as being like big computers that just ran the same program over and over and over again. And I think his notion was that our modern culture is different from that, but maybe not so much. Maybe, we are all trained up in a certain way and we all operate in terms of the same programs. And if we take it toward the person, the individual level a little more, I think what I was describing, in terms of people's, the tangles of emotionality that seem to drive people, it's very similar. Okay. So Michael, that's a good question. Michael asked another question. Does seeing other people's conditioned emotionality help us to see our own? Well, I think that's a question for people to ask. It's certainly a little bit suspicious to say, "Oh, I see that person's emotionality." That's the, I guess that's the living in glass houses and not throwing stones, right? So if you explain everything in terms of other people's reactivity and ignore your own, there's a problem there. I think what I was noticing, which just struck me as just a little different from that, was kind of imagining my way in, maybe that's the best way to say it, imagining my way into their emotionality. Freed up my sense of what's going on because, I was thinking of, I think, three different cases, and two of them I'm going to keep dealing with the same people. And opening, imagining my way into that, it just felt like things were more open. Of course, I'm not dealing with the people right now, but it just felt that way. And that's where I'm, that's what I was pointing to. But, yes, it's a little bit, you have to be careful not to ignore your own emotionality. So Sudhi says, I saw a different setup that can work out so much better than how it is. I realize how this inquiry can open up obvious things that we do not see ordinarily. It will free up my sense of obligations that I don't want to let go. I think that's exactly the direction in which this exercise can take us. You see new possibilities, right? Because, well, maybe we just need to focus on the idea of multidimensionality, the multidimensionality of traditional, transitional constructions. And then, as Rinpoche says, and I'm reading from page 66, thoughts invite radiant possibilities. With knowledge, when knowledge informs all of space, all sorts of things can happen. So Brigitte writes, and I think then we'll have to stop. Last week I felt caught in a long-time known tension caused by certain conditions. When I tried to escape that seemingly powerless situation, I looked at it as tracing it back as the stories that I tell myself how I have to react. This opened things up, allowed me to relax. And now I was recalling that. Well, that's right. The word tracing is a very interesting word, and I've actually looked at this in terms of how do you translate it into other languages when I've worked on TSK books on translations sometimes. It's not, the word in English is a little bit different from other languages that I know about. It has to do with like step by step going back to see how did something arise. And as you do that, and as you trace back the stories, as Brigitte says, they lose their hold. And that really is the point of what we've been trying to talk about. So an inquiry is a kind of a tracing. It really offers a lot of power. Okay, so we'll stop there for today, but I will post something in anticipation of the practice day. And part of what I'm going to suggest is that over the next couple of weeks, you work in not in a formal practice setting, but you ask yourself about how inquiry can lead you through speculation to imagination and embodiment. That's a kind of summary statement of what we've been looking at. So we'll meet again 2 weeks from now. I think it's 2 weeks. I'll double check it and confirm. And then we'll take a break over the summer. And in the fall, I expect we'll go on with the time section. But there'll be a lot of time to continue to explore these things. And since we didn't cover a lot of territory in terms of the reading, I think we covered a lot of territory in terms of the possibilities for knowledge. You'll have a chance to go back over it again and see. So, thank you to everyone, and we'll connect again soon.